Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emigan Awardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. I am delighted to welcome author and teacher Julia Cameron onto the podcast. Her book, The Artist's Way, which was published in 1992, is one of those books that you hear time and time again has changed someone's life. Perhaps most notably, the book Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert is a work the author herself says simply wouldn't exist without The Artist's Way. So what is The Artist's Way? Well, if you look for it in a bookshop, you'll likely find it in the self-help section, and its subtitle is A Spiritual Path to a Higher Creativity. Do you need to be an artist or an aspiring artist to read and get any benefit out of the book? Do you need to be spiritual or looking for spiritual guidance? Well, I would argue that the answer to those questions is no. The book takes the form of a 12-chapter program, and you may immediately feel similarities between this concept and other 12-step programs. And it helps the reader to free themselves of self-doubt and inner critic, face their fears, and rediscover who they are and what they really stand for. And in a world where it's easy to feel lost, pulled in a million directions by a million things, and having to conform to so many rules, it's not unheard of for people to feel rudderless and to feel as though life is living you rather than you are living life. It's something that has come up several times on this show, the idea of an epiphany, of suddenly realizing that you're on the wrong track, need to refocus, need to make changes, whatever they may be. And I have observed in those particular episodes that there's usually a catalyst, sometimes something negative, for want of a better expression, that snaps you out of a trance, that makes you suddenly see things in a new light or with a renewed focus. And what I think The Artist's Way has the power to do is, in a much gentler and more helpful way, be the catalyst to making a change. Maybe you would like to open yourself up to creativity. Maybe you think you're just fine as you are, but see no harm in giving it a go in order to see what it might reveal. Julia sees the process as unblocking and rediscovering, and the rediscovering part is perhaps the thing I found most attractive about the principles of The Artist's Way, that instead of looking outward for guidance, it's to be discovered by looking inward. The two main principles in the book are the morning pages, which is writing three pages of a stream of consciousness longhand as soon as you wake up, and the artist's date. And I will let Julia explain what those entail. But just to say that The Artist's Way feels quite timely. A 12-week project is probably something we'd all cite pre-COVID as being something we'd struggle to find time for. And you may be listening to this after lockdown, but it does beg the question, do you have the time for it now? Could this be a worthwhile investment for your future? I asked Julia in our conversation how The Artist's Way came to be, what expectations someone should have for the process, how to talk to your inner critic, how it may feel when your creative juices begin to flow, and why rediscovering or unblocking your creativity may at times be a very confronting and uncomfortable experience. As I'm sure you can appreciate, the podcast is now being recorded slightly differently. I am unable to be with my guests in person, so all of the episodes are currently being recorded via video call online. Now, this means that the sound at times may not be up to the quality you are used to, but please know that when I'm not recording the episodes or working towards creating episodes, I am low-key learning to become a sound engineer slash audio expert via various online tutorials and how-tos, and by asking friends who also have podcasts how they are trying to figure it out. It's just me here at The Emma Gunn Show, and I really am putting my best efforts towards bringing you good quality audio, but please bear with me while I am creating the show online. The links to Julia and the book will be in the show notes, but without any further ado, it is my pleasure to welcome Julia Cameron onto The Emma Gunn Show. So, Julia Cameron, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
You're very welcome.
It's so wonderful to speak to you. I think you wrote this book, The Artist's Way, and it's one of many books that you have written. And it is something that has come up time again, time and time again. So many people say, it changed my life.
Yes, that's the sentence.
But the life that it changed, first and foremost, was yours.
Yes. I found myself writing down the lessons that I had learned. And in writing them down, they became more clear to me. And I taught The Artist's Way for 10 years before I formally made it into a book.
And this was something, and we'll talk obviously about what The Artist's Way is, but this was just a practice that came to you as something that you used as what we would talk about nowadays, I guess, as my own structure, my own self-help techniques. It was just your own way of maximizing your creativity and potential.
Yes, it was a book of lessons I had learned to stay unblocked myself. And what I did was teach people what I had tried from Morning Pages to Artist States to many different techniques that I used in order to stay unblocked as an artist myself. I was first and foremost an artist.
And that's something that's really interesting to me, because when we're talking about unlocking creativity, that might think, some people listening to this podcast might be thinking, well, hang on a minute, I'm an accountant, or, well, I work in law and I'm not going to give all that up after doing a 12-week program in order to become a painter. But that's not what it's about, is it?
No, I think it's possible to say everyone is creative. And the tools unlock their creativity, but they may stay an accountant or stay a lawyer and find themselves exploring their creativity as a meaningful sideline.
And you've talked as well about a pursuit of creativity. I don't know if pursuit's the right word, but unlocking your creativity is also a key to unlocking your spirituality.
Yes, I find that if you work on your creativity, your spirituality increases, and that if you work on your spirituality, your creativity increases. So I see them as interlocked and both working together.
So let's talk about the book itself, because it is a 12-week course, so to speak. And what I find so interesting is that each chapter is called recovering. So chapter one, recovering a sense of safety, recovering a sense of identity. And in the genre of self-help, it's always struck me that we are being guided by the books or the gurus or the people that we admire, that we follow, on towards a path, an external discovery of our creativity or who we really are. But with The Artist's Way, it really struck me that it's an internal journey.
Yes, very much an internal journey. And people working the artist's way find themselves waking up to themselves. I often say, if you do these tools, you're going to fall in love with yourself. And sometimes people say, oh, I don't want to fall in love with myself. That sounds too mushy. And I say, no, it's not mushy. It's very grounded.
Grounded. Why? How important is it to fall in love with yourself or to love yourself?
Well, I think that people need to feel a sense of benevolence. And that often we come to the artist's way because we feel the world is sort of a hostile place and that the odds are stacked against us. And then when we start to work with the tools, what we find out is, oh, the world is actually benevolent. It's on my side. This is tremendous. So it's exciting for people to begin to have a grounded feeling of self-worth.
And a feeling of self-worth, is that something, I mean, obviously you've been doing this for a long time. The Artist Way was originally published in 1992.
Yes.
And you must have seen, because as well as people reading the book and having their own experience with it, you've taught people face-to-face. And you must have seen and felt these incredible transformations with people who were applying these rules.
Yes, I sometimes say it's a little bit like watching a garden grow. I go out to teach, I scatter the seeds of the flowers of creativity. They begin to sprout, and people, the term enlightenment comes to mind. And what I see from the front of the classroom is a great lightening up of faces and a great lightening up of body language as people begin to feel a sense of hope.
Hope, isn't that, wow. Hope is such, especially now, where things are obviously very different from anything we've ever experienced before. Hope is a recurring theme, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. I think that the tools of the artist's way are actually very well suited to this pandemic, that people have enforced solitude right now and enforced introspection. And the tools of the artist's way sort of lead them and channel them into a more productive form for themselves.
So can we talk about, how would you describe to someone who's listening, who, whether they've heard of the Artist Way or maybe they are new to it, what's the best way, considering you're the creator, what's the best way do you think of describing what this book is and can do?
That's a good question. I think of it as a toolkit that is a support kit for creativity. So if you are feeling like I'm starting the book and I'm not sure it applies to me, I'm not sure I'm creative at all, the tools will say, oh, maybe you're a little bit creative. And you begin to expand. And the tools are tools of expansion and tools of hope. And as you work with the tools, you come to an expanded sense of self.
And one of the main things, I think, if you Google the Artist Way, the two things that come up, and you've mentioned them already, are the morning pages and the artist date. And the morning pages, I think, are fascinating because this is a process of waking up and writing three pages of, well, it's essentially sort of dumping your consciousness onto a page.
Yes.
And that doesn't, it sounds like it might be harder than it sounds.
Well, I say to people, I have a tool for you. It's a nightmare. You have to get up a little bit earlier. You have to move your hand across the page. You have to record how it is you're actually feeling. So people write 3 pages of longhand morning writing, and it has to be longhand. A lot of times people will say, oh, but Julia, I'm so much quicker on computer. But what I say to them is, quick is not what we're after. We're after authenticity. So you write, this is what I like. This is what I don't like. This is what I want more of. This is what I want less of. And you record your precise position. And it's a little bit like you're sending a telegram to the universe. And so when you do morning pages, you're sending. You're allowing the universe to know exactly how you feel.
And I think what's really interesting about the morning pages, because you're not trying to compose something that anyone else will see, and there's no, the lovely expression I've heard you use is that there is no judgment. So it can be gibberish. It cannot really necessarily make sense. But the repeated pattern of doing it is, over time, when you look back on it, and we'll talk about how long you've got to leave it, but when you look back on it, you realize that things have come to the surface, and your brain has been hiding it from you. Is that, sounds a bit muddled, but that's really what it exposes, isn't it?
Well, what I say is, like, you have a little teeny broom and you poke it into all the corners of your consciousness, and you sweep the debris to the center of the room where you can look at it. And what happens is that you find yourself saying, I feel this way. I didn't know I felt that way. And you begin to become more authentically yourself. You begin to have a, I keep using the word grounded. I think that's so important. You have a more grounded sense of what it is you're up to. And morning pages are done first thing in the morning. And this is, rather than doing them later in the day, when you're reflecting on a day you've already had and you're powerless to change, you do them first thing in the morning and you sort of lay out a track for yourself. So they keep you from being swept up with other people's agendas.
That's really interesting, because when I was reading through everything, what I, again, another thing I got from it was, because you're peeling away the layers and you're understanding who you really are, what you really want, you, no one else is involved in that. It's a very private, personal pursuit. And the artist dates are about carving out that time, just you. And it struck me how it will ground you, and you'll have a better idea of what you stand for. And I say that because often we can think we know what we stand for, go into a social situation, other people will say what they stand for, and suddenly we're taken off track. But it feels like the morning pages and the artist's way sort of really grounds you, roots you to the center of the earth, so you can't be taken off course.
Yes, they keep you from being swept up by other people's agendas. They have, you're saying to yourself, this is how I really feel. And they are, I sometimes call them a radical codependency withdrawal. Because what they do is they put you on your own spine. It's a process I call spiritual chiropractic. And you write your pages and you tell yourself, this is how I feel. And then when you're in a social situation and there is controversy, you find yourself gently saying, ah, but this is how I feel. So they're not strident. They're not aggressive. They are tender.
And that's what makes them quite powerful, though, because it is a very gentle process.
Yes, I think the fact that it's private, morning pages are not to be shown to anybody. So if you're living with someone nosy, you have to hide them. And I've had people lock them in the car, put them under the mattress. I've had people go ahead and shred them right away. Because people often say, well, Julia, shouldn't I be going back and reading my morning pages? And this comes from fear that they're afraid that they're going to be missing something important. But what I have found with morning pages is that they will bring up something important over and over again. So you have very little chance of missing out.
So you don't need to go back and reread it to see.
Right. Because what I tell people is, why don't you wait 8 or 9 weeks and then be prepared to be bored and go back and read your pages. And sometimes you have just mundane day-to-day. I forgot to buy kitty litter. I didn't get the car fixed. I forgot to call my sister back. Sometimes it's just mundane details like this. But then every once in a while, a brilliant idea will come glittering through. And you'll say, oh, well, I could try that. And what I find, I call them a tool of expansion. What happens is you're writing your morning pages, and the pages will suggest a risk. And you'll think, I can't do that. Then you keep writing your morning pages, and they'll suggest the risk again. And you'll think, I don't think I can do that. Then you write your pages, and they suggest it a final time. And you find yourself saying, well, maybe I could try that. And in trying that, we often find success.
It really is, and you talk about a sensor as well. It really is the process of quieting your inner critic, your inner sensor. And I've heard people talk about it saying it's almost in childhood sometimes that sense of play and creativity is shut down and it's reopening up that vulnerable, playful, creative side in a very gentle, safe way.
Yes, this is why we call it a recovery course, because we're trying to recover the territory we've drifted away from our creative selves. And I think that it's important to say that when you write, your inner critic or censor will speak up. And they'll say, oh, Julia, this is boring. And you'll say to your censor, thank you for sharing, and keep right on writing. So what happens is that you're training your censor that you are able to be bold despite your censor. Because usually when people start the artist's way, they're afraid of their censor. It's a bully. It has convinced them to not take risks. So what happens when you start saying there's no wrong way to do pages and you say to your censor, thank you for sharing. I have an inner censor I call Nigel.
The British interior designer.
Yes, he's a British interior designer and nothing I do is ever good enough for Nigel. And Nigel has been around since I was 18. I'm 72 now. And Nigel keeps up a running commentary. And I've learned to say, Nigel, thank you so much for sharing. But I'm going to keep right on writing.
And how does that impact what you then go on to write? Knowing that actually the hurdle that used to be quite big has been so minimized.
I'm not sure what your question is.
I, because Nigel is always there, but he used to be, he may have stopped you in the past, but now he has no impact on you whatsoever. So something that you were previously frightened of or had an impact on you no longer has an impact on you. And that I would expect is really empowering. And I wonder whether that has an impact on the work that then you write.
Well, I think what happens is that you become more bold and you start to, Nigel starts peeping up and you start saying, thank you for sharing, Nigel, but I'm going to keep right on writing. And you come close to what I might call a first thought, which is that the thing that occurs to you goes right onto the page rather than you're waiting and saying, oh, maybe Nigel is right. So you become more bold. You become more daring. It's important to notice that when you miniaturize Nigel from your morning pages, that this is a portable skill. So you want to step on the stage and Nigel says, you're going to look like a fool. And you say, Nigel, thank you for sharing. And you step onto the stage. So what happens with your Nigel is not that you get rid of your Nigel, which we would all love, but we learn to ignore our Nigels.
How you said that Nigel has been with you since you were 18. How was it a process where one day these negative voices, you said, actually, you're going to be somebody. I'm going to give you a name. I'm going to give you a nationality. I'm going to give you a profession. Do you think that's quite an important process to almost give that give those voices a personality and a name so that you can speak to them? And is that part of the process of then miniaturizing them?
Well, I think that's fun. we have this bullying voice and we want to miniaturize it. So we make a cartoon character of it. And as we make a cartoon character, in my case, Nigel, what happens is we begin to be more free. And instead of hearing the voice of the censor as this booming voice of doom that is always correct, we begin to hear it as a negative little voice that's sort of squeaking along. It helps a lot.
And also you spoke a little while ago about benevolence, about seeing the world as a nice place. And if your internal monologue is negative, and it's Nigel, for example, if you wake up in the morning and you already have a negative voice and you're giving it an element of control, it would make sense that when you then go out into the world, you might perceive negativity. And I say this, Julia, from personal experience. And I'm wondering if you found with yourself and with other people, whether when you miniaturize Nigel, the world becomes a nicer place as well, because actually you're quietening negativity from all corners.
The answer to that is yes, absolutely. When you miniaturize Nigel as a negative voice, I want to say that Jungians have a term for this. They call it meeting the shadow. And I believe we not only meet our shadow, we take our shadow out for a cup of coffee. What happens is that people who have done a lot of New Age work will sometimes say to me, Julia, I'm afraid of morning pages because I don't want to put negativity into the world. And my pages are negative. And what I say to them is, smarty, Sometimes we should call them morning pages, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. Because when you brush off a buried dream, it sometimes sends voltage of grief through your system. So what I have found is that as we put our negatives onto the page, we are actually ventilating them and keeping them from having power.
Interesting. Ventilating is such an interesting way of describing it.
Yes.
It's a really fascinating process of, as you say, even if they're negative to begin with, in your experience, does that tend to change? Do the tone of the pages tend to change? If we are talking about something that's quite cathartic, would somebody listening to this who maybe tries it expect, if it starts out negative, that at some point during the process they may begin to feel a more positive experience with those pages?
The answer to that is yes. And I would say it takes a few weeks. That if you start out grief-stricken, sad, mournful, and then you become angry at all the misplaced opportunities in your life. And then what happens is you start to feel a tiny bit of optimism. And that tiny bit of optimism grows. And we should talk about artist states.
Mm.
When I wrote The Artist's Way, I thought there are two basic tools. And the first one is sending. That's morning pages, where you're sending a note to the universe about your likes and dislikes. But then you need to have a way to receive. And an artist's date is how you receive.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And you go, well, if we weren't locked down, it would be an expedition to do something festive that you undertake alone outside of the house. But on lockdown, we say you need to find something festive that you undertake alone right in your house. Mm. So you do something enjoyable. It might be making a pot of vegetable soup. In my case, I do sketches. I don't consider myself to be a visual artist, but I love what happens when I sketch a familiar object, is that it brings a surge of warmth to me. So I have sketched something that I call my God jar, which is a large porcelain jar twined with dragons. And I've owned it since 1978. And I put my prayer requests into it. And what I found was that over the years, I had stopped seeing it. And when I sketched it again, it was like, oh, there's a beloved object. Oh, that's fun. So you may, people may take bubble baths, they may do nail art, they may listen to an unfamiliar piece of music, they may listen to a podcast that maybe previously they said, oh, that's too frivolous. And instead, during the pandemic, you say, it sounds fun. Maybe I can try it. So the object is to do something delightful.
And just with you. And I think when I started reading about artist dates, I thought about all the times I'd been to the cinema with other people and wasn't enjoying the film because I was hoping they were enjoying it. Because if they enjoyed it, then that would make me happy.
Well, this is what we're talking about with an artist date being solo. Because what we find is that when you are doing something by yourself with only your own consciousness to worry about, you begin to have a contact with a benevolent source. So a lot of times people will say, Julia, I think I felt God. And I will say, well, that's one of the benefits of doing artist dates, is that you contact a greater power.
What really struck me as well was that the greater power, and you say in the book, you can call it what you like, depending on what you believe. But I kept coming back to the fact that the greater power is within me, the individual. Again, it's not an external thing like we spoke about earlier on in the podcast. And I found that a really wonderful thing to take away from it. Like if I'm looking for magic or if I'm looking for something, to know that it's within me, I thought was is a really lovely discovery.
Well, I think that we have discovered when we do artist dates and morning pages, we discover an inner resource. And it frequently shows up as guidance. I will say to people, ask a question. I go LJ, Little Julie. And then I ask a question. And I listen to hear what the answer is. And I write down what I hear. And very often what you hear is something that's simpler and kinder than you would have imagined.
I mean, that takes practice though, right? Getting to that point where you can have that feeling and you can listen, because I was thinking there may be people listening to this podcast who think, well, I've stood and made vegetable soup, a pot of vegetable soup before, and I've never felt connected to anything. What's the missing piece of the puzzle that might help somebody get to a place where when they are in that flow state, when they're doing something on autopilot, for example, that they can begin to reap the benefits of the artist's way and what you talk about?
Well, I think that it comes down to a matter of intention, that we can do things mindlessly or we can do things mindfully. And I think when we say, I'm going to focus on the now, and then we go forward into an activity, we begin to feel connected. And I think that it's important that we do focus on the now. One of the things about lockdown is we think, oh my God, how much longer can this last? And then we find if we do it one day at a time, sometimes 1 hour at a time, that it's quite bearable and even has a silver lining.
Yeah, exactly. So rather than looking at a big mammoth project and worrying about the things that you can't control, it's I'll worry about the next hour when I can control what I do in those 60 minutes.
Yes, that's right.
And also, I think what I found really interesting in the book is the idea of overcoming artistic blocks. And again, this isn't so you'll become a painter, composer, or filmmaker, although that may be where you want to be. But it was the step-by-step to overcome things like limiting beliefs and to overcome fear and to overcome self-sabotage and jealousy and guilt. And these are all really powerful things to overcome. And I wonder, if somebody sits down with this book and they work through it and they do the 12 weeks, what will they, how do you think, having taught this, and as we've talked about earlier, you see people, see it in their faces, what's the transformation that you see when you see somebody start and you see somebody at the end? I know you talk about the change in body language, but in how they are able to then go forward in their lives, is it like a completely new person? Is it like a metamorphosis?
Well, I think it's very powerful. And I think the journey is very individual. And I think you set out perhaps wanting to unblock a specific something, and you find yourself unblocking many things. And when you have finished with the process, I say, keep writing morning pages. It's a little bit like you make a tiny adjustment in a trajectory of a moon launch, and over time, that tiny little adjustment of morning pages yields a huge sea change. So I think I've had people who have been doing these tools for decades now, and they would no more give them up than they would give up breathing. And what they found, you know, I have somebody who comes in and he's a blocked theater person. And he writes morning pages and he begins auditioning again. So you find yourself taking a risk on the page and then taking a risk in life. So I think people become, I want to say, perky.
I like the idea of that. The transformation leads to perkiness.
Yes.
And optimism, I guess. And I think I kept thinking about it as building up a wall around you. And what the artist's way does is it takes down the wall.
Yes.
And that's why it must appear as something very freeing. And I think as well, I was listening to Elizabeth Gilbert talk about her experience with the artist's way and with morning pages. And she says, as I'm sure you know, and I know a lot of listeners follow Elizabeth Gilbert, that without your book, there would be no Eat, Pray, Love, because after she did the morning pages, without realizing it when she went back, this thing about learning Italian came up. And then learning Italian meant going to night school, and then that led to the trip that is obviously the feature of that book. And that is a game changer. It's a life changer. It's a huge transformation. And I wonder what, I mean, that's just one example of the hundreds of thousands of millions of people who've read this. You must say this to you, that it is a life-changing experience doing these pages, doing these artist dates.
Well, sometimes people will say to me, the sentence that I usually hear is, your book changed my life. And I say, you changed your life. You used the tools. And I think I recently had a book come out, and the reviewer said, Cameron's tools are simple and repetitive. And I think it was intended as an insult.
Oh.
But I thought, far out. I think my tools are simple. I think they are repetitive. I think that something that worked 40 years ago works now. So I think I like to try and lure people a little bit and say, if you want to feel more cheery, try this process.
And I think I heard you say maybe it's like a spiral, and it asks you similar questions or the same question different ways throughout the practice, because it's trying to unlock. And I really like that idea of throughout the process, as you're growing, you're being asked the same question. And as you go through the process, maybe each time the answer changes ever so slightly as you begin to unlock or blossom, whatever you might want to say.
Yes.
So I know this might seem like such a weird question to ask, but how long should it take to do your morning pages, or is it completely individual?
So your answer is it's completely individual. Some people are demon fast. They move their hand across the page. They keep their hand moving across the page, and they're done in 20 minutes. Other people, it takes 45. And I think one of the differences is that if it takes a long time, it's because the person is taking what I call mental cigarette breaks. And so they're writing, and then they think, I'll just think about that a little bit. And they pause. And that's what makes the process take longer. So I can't give you an exact amount of time that it takes to do the pages. But I think you will find your own comfort level with pace.
Interesting. So, and your pace is correct. And again, it comes back to this idea that the process is non-judgmental. So whatever you do is correct. I am also really interested by the idea that the process, as much as it will be wonderful, might also be difficult and uncomfortable. And actually that you've encountered people who may start it, begin to see or feel some benefits, and it frightens them, and maybe they stop or they pull back. If someone's listening to this and they maybe get 3 weeks in and they feel, oh, I don't know about doing next week, what would you say in order to get them over that, about the fear of unlocking their creativity?
Say, sweet pea, just try next week. But what happens at about week 8 or 9, people may be tempted to skid to a halt. And that's because they're not who they used to be, but they haven't become who they're becoming yet. So they're a little bit afraid of the future. So I think I want to talk about an exercise called blasting through blocks. It's in The Artist's Way. It's toward the back of the book. And it's a tool that you use to overcome procrastination and fear. And what you do is you list your fears about going ahead. And then you list your angers about going ahead. And then you call up your most benevolent, positive friend, somebody I call a believing mirror, who is very positive for you. And you say, can I just read you this laundry list? And you read the list, and then you go back to work.
And what does the believing mirror, what does the process of saying it out loud to them, what does it do for the individual? How does it help?
Well, before you share it, it's like your dirty little secrets. And when you share it, you're ventilating the process,
which can only be a helpful thing.
Which is a helpful thing.
And I guess a lot of people will be listening to this, maybe considering doing morning pages, or I actually asked in my Facebook group for the podcast, and I asked who's done this. Loads of people came back and said, I did this, I loved it, it changed my life, I'm going to do it again now that we're in lockdown. And I know I listened to Elizabeth Gilbert recently, who said she hadn't done it in a while and she is going to do it again because she knows that her reaction will be different. But there were also a couple of people who had said, I've got this book out of the library a couple of times and sort of danced around it and never committed. What's the worst that can happen?
The worst that can happen?
I just mean if people are putting off the idea, if they are thinking, I'm a little bit scared to open this, or 12 weeks seems like a long time, or maybe I'm not a creative person after all, then I'm fine just as I am. I just mean, what can they hope to unlock just in the early stages? How will they know that it's right for them?
Well, I don't ever try and sell the book. I feel like people come to it, they're tempted by it, they stick a toe in, and they become their own advocate. I'm reluctant to say, use my book, it will change your world. But I think it does.
Yeah. And like I said, you've seen this so many times with people when you've been teaching it. So it must, and this is why I think it is extraordinary that this was just something that you did. And a friend said to you, you need to write this down. And then you right. wrote it down and he said, now you need to add this thing.
This was, I often say I have to blame the artist's way on love. I met a man who was a blocked writer. And I said to him, I teach on blocking. Would you like to take a course? And he said, where's the book? And I said, I am the book. And he said, you should write it down. It could help a lot of people. So every week I would go and say, what does that guy need to know? And I wrote the book at him.
I like the idea of that, just at him.
Yes.
I guess in order to close as well, because it is such an interesting concept, we are talking when the world is in lockdown. We are on opposite sides of the planet having this conversation and we're both at home. This is actually a really good time to try this out, right?
I think so. I think that we have a situation where we find ourselves craving a release and we feel claustrophobic and we need a sense of expansion. And I think that the tools of the artist's way give us a sense of expansion and they make us feel like, well, maybe I'm not trapped.
I know it might seem like an odd question, but what expectation, is there an expectation when you're starting something like this? Or should people go in with a very open mind and without expectation and just let the process happen? Because I ask this because anything that I'm doing, and self-help has become quite sort of type A, you invest your time in it if you think you're going to get something at the end. And I wonder if there is a way in which to approach the artist's way, whether it's to think, yes, at the end of this, I'm going to write my book, or whether it's to be, let's see what happens, and just be a little bit more like a cork bobbing on the ocean.
I think you've answered your own question.
The latter.
Yes.
Have no expectation. That's lovely. And you have written so many other books that it's extraordinary.
Well, I think that using the Artist's Way tools keeps unblocking me. And I just finished a play that I wrote during lockdown. The first part of lockdown, I was keeping myself very busy, and I called a girlfriend of mine, whom you might know, a singer named Judy Collins.
Okay.
And I called Judy and said, "What are you doing?" She said, "Oh, I'm painting, I'm writing, I'm doing music." And I thought, I'm the queen of creativity and I'm not doing a goddamn thing. And then what happened was that I started writing the play. Every day I would think, "I'm not sure what happens next." And Nigel will say, "You don't know what happens next. Shame on you." And I would say, "I'm just going to try." And so what I did during lockdown was write a play.
And also one of the other things I wanted to ask you about one of your other books is it's about you're never too old to start something new. And I heard you on Fabulous James Altucher's podcast, and he was talking about, "Well, I'm 51 now and I've only just been doing stand-up comedy for a little while. And I don't have years ahead of me where I can practice. I just have to go out and do it." And again, I believe you talked about unblocking and just saying you don't have to put the years in. You just need to unblock and do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
And so if someone is listening to this and they think you can't teach an old dog new tricks, for want of, you know, which is an expression that we often use, or I'm too old to make a change, or I'm too old to indulge that creative streak that I know I had when I was younger, what would you say to those people?
I would say it's never too late to begin again, which is the title of that book. And I would tell them that they need to pay attention to how they feel when they're doing something creative, because how we feel is ageless, timeless, youthful, vibrant, and that the feeling of creativity is something that they should follow.
In fact, that was one of my, that's written down on my notepad. What should or what does creativity feel like?
It feels very good.
So you know when you're there?
I think so.
That's lovely. Well, thank you so much, Julia. It's been such a pleasure to speak to you. And the book, I mean, it's just an extraordinary resource. It really is.
Thank you.
And I am writing my morning pages.
Bravo.
And I am waiting to see. I feel like... what's the expression, you know, looking for gold. I feel like my morning pages are, I'm shaking to wait for the gold to start to appear.
Yes, that's called a cupel, C-U-P-E-L. It's the tool that you use to sift the gold.
Yes. That's so, how I feel about morning pages.
They're your cupel.
Yes. Thank you so much for your time. Obviously, the links to your social media, the books will be in the show notes for the podcast, and for people to follow you, I will obviously put in your website and everything. But honestly, it's been such a joy to chat to you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you too.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with Julia and are now perhaps tempted to try the artist way and those techniques of the morning pages and the artist dates for yourself. What really struck me about the process when speaking with Julia is how she has really created a framework and a set of tools, and how there is no right or wrong way to experience the program. I very much felt that she has done her part and now it is up to you. So it's so nice to know that there's no judgment, there's no right or wrong, however you use it is the right way to use it. Some of you listening, me included, may feel blocked, as she mentioned in the show, but then by trying out the program, you may discover and overcome a block you didn't even know that you had, which I think is really appealing. Like, what's the worst that can happen? What have you got to lose by doing the 12 weeks? The time between me being offered time with Julia and actually talking to Julia was less than 12 weeks, so I wasn't able to complete the program before I spoke to her, but I am doing the morning pages and I am beginning to start to work my way through the book because there really doesn't seem to be anything to lose from doing so, and I'm quite excited about what it might throw up because I do keep coming back to what Elizabeth Gilbert, the author, said when she said about writing her morning pages and that she kept mentioning learning Italian, something she'd never really thought about, and how that decision to actually learn Italian took her on the adventure that we all know as the book Eat, Pray, Love. And I have to admit, I'm curious to see if there's something, as Elizabeth put in one interview, that my mind has been hiding from me. Who knows? Obviously, if I find out, I will be sharing it with you, and most likely on a midweek mini show. Now, if you want to get in touch with me, which is obviously my favourite thing to happen, please do email me on thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to DM me on Instagram or Twitter, I am at Emma Guns, and it would be a delight to chat to you there too. If you want to talk to me and thousands of other listeners of this very podcast, then go to the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode, and click the link to join. You have to answer a couple of questions and agree to the forum rules, and then you will be welcomed in with open arms to talk about this and any other episode that you may have been listening to. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your time. I will see you on the next one.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.